2. In audio letter 59 last October, I reported that the Bolsheviks here were trying to set up a new strategy to bring on nuclear war 1. They had been foiled repeatedly in their attempts to trigger a war by means of our hostages in Iran. So they were devising a new plan which was to be set in motion after releasing the hostages. When voting machines registered a surprise landslide in the name of Ronald Reagan last November, it set a deadline for arranging a hostage release. That deadline was Inauguration Day, January 20, last month. Otherwise, the Bolsheviks were in danger of losing control of the Iran crisis, which they themselves had created. And so, at the very last minute, our hostages were released last month. Contrary to the original plans of the Bolsheviks here and in Iran, our hostages came home alive. But now, new maneuvers are underway to bring on war. Bolshevik agents are stirring up Poland in never-ending strikes and turmoil. Having failed in their Pope's Revolution plan of 2 years ago, they're trying to make Poland explode in a different way. Meanwhile, to keep Russia's new rulers off balance, another crisis has been created in our own hemisphere, El Salvador. CIA operatives are stirring up both sides in the civil war there in order to have something to blame on Cuba. As always, the Russians are reacting strongly to the implied new American threats against Cuba. So El Salvador is serving its purpose as a tool to stoke up tensions between Russia and the United States. The El Salvador crisis contains echoes of Operation Guyana 2 years ago. Now as then, Russia is being encouraged to worry about Cuba as a diversionary tactic. And just as happened in Guyana, human lives are being sacrificed purely to attract attention. Public attention was first riveted on Guyana by the Port Kaituma Airport massacre. And not long ago, public attention was focused on El Salvador by the murder of 4 religious workers. All this is to help catch Russia off guard later on when the arena of conflict shifts once again to the Persian Gulf area. Once again, secret plans are being laid to create conflict between Israel and Saudi Arabia. For that purpose, the United States has just announced that it will sell offensive armaments for Saudi Arabia's F-15 fighter bombers. And at the same time, there are planted reports that the Saudis favor a jihad, a Muslim holy war, to retake Jerusalem. Right now, all this is going on quietly. It is not highlighted in our controlled major media. But the preparations are underway now for a Persian Gulf explosion later this year of 1981. When that takes place, the plan is to focus all eyes once again on Iran. At a critical moment, the shaky Iranian government will be brought down. Suddenly, that will leave Russian forces on the north and American forces on the south with a vacuum in between. And almost overnight, the stage will be set for a nuclear confrontation. As a preliminary step, the plan is also to declare a national economic emergency here in the United States. That will trigger the emergency powers of the president. And while we will be told that it is all to fight inflation, it will actually be to prepare for a nuclear war. My friends, if all this is to be stopped, we must go to the source of the satanic power. That power is money power, wrongly used. It is the power of the modern-day money changers in our land. So it is to them that I now direct your attention. Topic number 3. When our Lord Jesus Christ walked the earth nearly 2,000 years ago, He did many miraculous things. He healed the sick. He fed the hungry. He loved the unloved. In short, He went about doing good. Most of the time, our Lord astonished everyone with His patience. When He taught, He found that people did not pay attention, And so he had to teach them the same lesson over and over again. And yet, he never once grew angry with anyone who was seeking to learn. Even so, he also told his disciples, "Do you think that I have come to bring peace? No, not peace, but a sword." He explained that there must be a division between those who are for God and those who are against God. And as gentle as he was with the weak, he displayed a fiery anger with those who were swollen up with arrogant power. And one time, the anger of our Lord Jesus Christ exploded into violence. That one occasion, my friends, was when he confronted the money changers in the temple. The temple money changers possessed a money monopoly. Everyone who came to worship presented offerings to the priests. And to buy something to offer, they had to use a special temple money, so-called. The temple money was not really money at all. It was only a kind of scrip with no intrinsic value. But everyone who came to worship, from the richest to the poorest, had to turn in good coins of gold, silver, and copper to buy the scrip. That was the only way that they could buy a sheep or a ram or a dove to offer to the priest. The money changers really performed no useful function at all. But thanks to their money monopoly, they extracted tremendous profits from everyone else. When Jesus saw all this, he became enraged. The money changers were so corrupt that they were standing in the way of worship itself in order to make money. So Jesus wasted no time trying to reason with them. Instead, he seized a whip and went after them. He drove away the money changers. He knocked over their counting tables. And seizing their bags of money, obtained by a form of theft, he ripped them open and spilled them out. My friends, today it is you and I who are at the mercy of the money changers. We too have been forced to give up real money made of silver and gold. Instead, we are forced by the Federal Reserve money monopoly to deal in Federal Reserve IOUs, nothing but paper scrip. And in return, the arrogant money changers of today, the Bolsheviks, are trying to take everything from us. They are eating up our savings by creating inflation through interest rates, which create no new wealth. They are using their money power to betray us into nuclear war. And they are even trying to destroy the Christian faith itself by constantly working to pervert our religious practices. Like the money changers of old, haters of our Lord Jesus Christ are once again sitting in the temple. Almost from the moment our republic was founded, the money changers started trying to seize control of America's money. First, the idea was called the Bank of the United States. Such a bank did exist for a while with a charter granted by Congress. But on July 10, 1832, President Andrew Jackson put a stop to the central bank idea for a while. Congress had passed a bill to give a new 20-year charter to a Bank of the United States. Jackson vetoed the bill with the words, "Every monopoly and all exclusive privileges are granted at the expense of the public, which ought to receive a fair equivalent." In other words, Jackson was insisting that the public be treated fairly. But, my friends, the money changers never give up. In 1913, they finally got what they wanted. It is called the Federal Reserve System. Nowadays, few people know the story of how the Federal Reserve System came into existence. Suffice it to say that it took only a few of the international bankers to do it without great fanfare. One man, more than any other, was the father of the Federal Reserve in its present form. As the proceedings of the Academy of Political Science of Columbia University put it, quote, "The Federal Reserve Act will be associated in history with the name of Paul M. Warburg," unquote. In order for Warburg and his associates to quietly get this legislation past Congress, he had to overcome one objection. That major objection was to the creation of only one central bank, which would obviously be a monopoly. Warburg got around that by conceiving the 12-bank Federal Reserve System. But when a senator asked him how he would maintain control of 12 banks instead of the single bank he favored, Warburg answered, quote, "It is a little bit complicated, which objection, however, can be overcome in an administrative way," unquote. In other words, my friends, he could short-circuit the 12-bank system and do what he wanted a central bank to do by administrative techniques. And that is what has been done in the situation over our missing gold. The real central bank is the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, and the administrative arm of that central bank is actually the Board of Governors here in Washington. The New York Bank, the Board of Governors, and agents within the United States Treasury Department all work hand in glove. It is they who constitute the modern-day money changers in our land. In all of this, the other 11 regional Federal Reserve banks just go along for the ride. They do possess latent powers of their own, but thanks to Warburg's administrative techniques, quote-unquote, they are always indoctrinated not to exercise those powers. Instead, the 11 regional banks outside New York are treated like children by the money changers in New York and Washington. They are given big buildings, fancy offices, impressive stationery, fat salaries, numerous advisors, and impressive titles. But they are always told, in effect, "Leave all the thinking to us big boys." Year in and year out, the regional Federal Reserve banks, all except New York, are kept in the dark. So last month in Audio Letter 61, I tried to light a candle in that darkness. All of the Federal Reserve banks share in the responsibility for safeguarding our gold. The presidents and directors of all the banks are now on legal notice concerning those responsibilities. So from now on, they will have no excuse. Either they are for us or they are against us. They must make a choice. They do hold power, and those who hold power must be held accountable for the consequences of its exercise. The question we have posed is very simple and very basic. Either America's gold is there or it is not there. We want an indisputable physical inventory to find out once and for all. So we have appealed to the regional Federal Reserve banks to wake up, to flex their muscles for once, and to bring about an inventory. My friends, I want to thank all of you who followed through on what I asked you to do last month. And I want to let you know the results so far. Up to now, the Federal Reserve System is continuing to maintain its false outer appearance of unruffled unity. But behind that facade, little cracks are beginning to open up. It's true, many of the regional bank directors have so far been unable to open their minds to the truth. But there are some important exceptions. One high official of one regional Federal Reserve Bank is being very cooperative up to now. Very quietly, he is providing us with important information. He has not yet gone so far as to demand an inventory, but he is responding with an open mind. At one other regional bank, a high official has signaled to us that he is seriously concerned. But up to now, he is still sitting on the fence. Beyond that, I have also received reliable reports that scattered around the country, a number of regional Federal Reserve directors are troubled. Until last month, they had never been given one hint of their own legal responsibilities regarding the gold. My friends, all this is at least an encouraging start. But it is clear that they are going to take more convincing. We should not be surprised at that, nor discouraged by it. Many of these men have been associated with the Federal Reserve System for many years. Human nature being what it is, they naturally find it hard to accept the fact that the wool has been pulled over their eyes. Typically, these are highly educated men. They are not stupid. They will have to swallow their pride in many cases if they are to see how thoroughly they have been fooled and used. Over the past 6 or 7 years, I've made public many facts which these men should consider for their own good. But rather than go back over any of those again, I want to report 3 new ones. The discrepancy surrounding our gold supplies just go on and on, my friends. First, let me refer to the Treasury Inspector General's report to Senator William Proxmire, dated last September 30, 1980. This so-called report came about because of your letters to Senator Proxmire. The subject was the missing gold shipment from Fort Knox of January 20, 1965, which I have discussed in past audio letters. The shipment amounted to over 1.75 million ounces of gold, worth around $1 billion at today's prices. Yet it was omitted from official Treasury shipment listings. Recently, this feeble excuse for a report has been cited by the Federal Reserve Board of Governors. For example, on February 2, 1981, Theodore E. Allison, Secretary of the Board of Governors, wrote to the President of the Philadelphia Bank, Mr. Edward G. Bone. Bone had written to the Board of Governors in response to your inquiries. And with their letter of reply, the Board enclosed the Treasury Inspector General's report. My friends, I have mentioned before that this report is totally unsatisfactory. It is a fraud and a farce. Yet now the money changers of the Board of Governors are falling back on that report as one way to calm down the regional banks. So I think it is appropriate to give you just one example of the glaring errors sprinkled throughout the report. I also want to do this because some of you have asked me to say more about it. If you have a copy of the Treasury Inspector General's report, please look on page 2. The third paragraph refers to the missing shipment of January 20, 1965. It says very impressively, quote, "This shipment was receipted for on Treasury Department Form TUS-12B, receipt for forwarding depository voucher number 65-1 on January 22, 1965, by John P. Bath, an employee of the New York Assay Office," unquote. Sounds cut and dry, doesn't it? Sorry, my friends. It so happens that the New York Assay Office had no permanent employee named John P. Bath on January 22, 1965. So if the receipt quoted by the Treasury Inspector General exists at all, it means absolutely nothing. It is fraudulent. That is the kind of report which Senator William Proxmire was so eager and happy to settle for. And that is the kind of report which the Federal Reserve Board of Governors now uses to soothe the regional banks. If the regional Federal Reserve banks want to swallow that, then shame on them. Now let me give you a second example, another major discrepancy in the records of the Treasury Department and the Federal Reserve Board of Governors. I have spoken before about the so-called London Gold Pool, which operated between 1961 and 1968. This is the official cloak of authority which was used during that period to explain the hemorrhage of gold out of Fort Knox. According to official Treasury records, some 219.5 million ounces of gold left Fort Knox. Of that amount, supposedly a little over 9 million ounces went to the New York Federal Reserve Bank. The other 210 million ounces were supposedly destined for the London Gold Pool. But now let me give you the conflicting statements of former Treasury Secretary William Simon. On May 4, 1976, he wrote to then-Congressman John Conlon of Arizona. Conlon had requested some better answers from Simon than he had given previously to questions about our missing gold. Simon spent over 2 months constructing a reply to Conlon's February 26, 1976 letter. Simon sent Conlon a 2-page letter plus an 8-page memorandum trying to refute the charges. At one point in the memorandum, Simon says, quote, "The statement which alleges that the shipments of gold to London for the London Gold Pool arrangement were used as a cover for secret losses of United States gold simply isn't true, unquote. And yet, just four sentences later, Simon says, quote, when the arrangement was terminated by the Washington Agreement of March 1968, the United States had made net sales to the pool during its period of operation totaling 45.2 million ounces, unquote. Now, let's compare two numbers side by side, my friends. First is Simon's number. As Secretary of the Treasury, he said that the United States sent only about 45 million ounces of gold net to the London Gold Pool. But Treasury records give a different number. At least 210 million ounces disappeared from Fort Knox alone during that period. If only 45 million ounces went to the gold pool, as Simon said in writing, what happened to all the rest? 210 million minus 45 million leaves 165 million ounces of gold from Fort Knox unaccounted for. Yet I repeat, the only excuse ever given for the Fort Knox gold hemorrhage was the London gold pool. My friends, that unaccounted for gold is Federal Reserve gold belonging to the American people. As I detailed last month, the Federal Reserve title to the gold is beyond legal dispute. Every officer and every director of every regional Federal Reserve Bank shares a legal responsibility if that gold is missing and if they do not investigate. The incredible discrepancy I have just revealed is in black and white in Treasury statements. Do the regional banks dare to close their eyes to it? If so, God help us all. Now let me report just one more mystery to you about our gold. This one did not take place years ago, but just this month, February 1981. Last month, our hostages were finally released from Iran. Most of the last-minute settlements involved banking matters. Most of all, Iran demanded that 1.6 million ounces of gold be returned. According to all the news reports, the return of Iran's gold was arranged by cable transactions between the Federal Reserve System and the Bank of England. Supposedly, Iran's 1.6 million ounces of gold was safe and sound at the New York Federal Reserve Bank. By a system of banking credits, this amount of gold was reportedly credited to Britain's gold stock here in America. Then the Bank of England turned over an equivalent amount of gold into Iran's custody in London. We were told that no gold actually left America in this transaction. But, my friends, that is a lie. Simply put, Britain's bankers do not trust us. The Bank of England secretly demanded that Iran's 1.6 million ounces of good delivery gold be physically sent to London. And so on February 7, just 3 weeks ago, there was a secret gold shipment to London by air. It came to about 1.6 million ounces, but it did not come from the New York Federal Reserve Bank. It was not Iran's gold. Instead, the shipment was made from the New York Assay Office. Dregs of junk gold from Fort Knox were scraped together, then it was rushed to London in secret. My friends, this raises a very serious question. If Iran's gold still existed at the New York Bank, why was that not sent to London? Why was the New York Assay Office given a panic refining job to scrape together the gold? In any case, the gold that went to London was not Iranian gold. It was Federal Reserve gold, part of the small amount still left in this country. It was taken from the dregs of junk gold removed from Fort Knox for auctions in the recent past. As I reported more than 5 years ago in Audio Letter 5, any gold left in Fort Knox is radioactive. It has been contaminated by plutonium super poison, stored in the gold vault by the CIA in the late 60s. Recently, a leading Swiss bank refused to take delivery of Fort Knox gold purchased in a gold auction. Their tests proved that the gold was indeed radioactive. So the Bank of England should test the gold, which they just received, very carefully. The secret gold shipment of February 7 further depleted what little is left of the Federal Reserve gold. It took place with the knowledge and collusion of the Federal Reserve Board of Governors and the New York Bank. But once again, the other 11 regional banks have been taken for a ride. It may well be that they do not even know about this latest disappearance of their gold. If not, they have once again been used by the money changers who control them. My friends, there are mountains of evidence that our gold reserves are not as claimed. But will the regional Federal Reserve bankers wake up in time? Will they take action to save both themselves and our country? If they do not act, what lies ahead may well be foreshadowed in these words written to a commercial banker by one of my listeners. More and more of my friends and people I know are withdrawing all their funds held in banks, then dealing in cash, silver, gold, and barter systems for their transactions. Banks and bankers, through not serving the true interests of the people, are losing any useful place in society. Now it is time for my last-minute summary. As I say these words, the Space Shuttle Columbia is being readied for a desperate secret military mission. Once again, powerful forces here in the United States are bent on war, nuclear war. Our own money has been taken away from us in order to finance preparations for warfare that will destroy us. The evil which is being planned for us all has one root. That root is a satanic and perverted money power. If we are serious about saving our land, we must pull up that root. We must do as our Lord Jesus Christ Himself did long ago. We must drive out the money changers and restore honor and honesty to our land. Until next month, God willing, this is Dr. Beter. Thank you, and may God bless each and every one of you.